a louder, more boisterous, more in your face candidate. And it always backfired as she's, I mean, they wouldn't put it in the papers, but they're like, well, she's a bitch. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Blue Sedition Podcast. I'm here with my co-host Mike Smith. Mike, what's going on, man?
Man, nothing much. Just you know, living my life in the blue state, worried that the deep state's going to take over via the red state. So
yeah, that's well, we can't give control of the weather machine to the red state. So that's
never.
Never do that. Man, it's been a couple days, I guess, since we last chatted. So some things have happened.
Some things have definitely happened.
Some things. I mean, things are happening right now as we speak.
Yeah.
But even a lot today. So let's go over some current events.
Yeah, let's get some current events up there. We'll
okay.
Start with a silly one. It's one of our favorites. Obviously, North Carolina GOP gubernatorial candidate Mark Robinson. We like to harp on him. He's the funny. This is, for people who are unaware, he's the self-proclaimed black Nazi.
Yeah.
He's running for governor in North Carolina.
He's a
fun one to talk about. We dig into him in one of the past episodes. Go check that out if you haven't already. And he is just a tapestry for storytelling. It's amazing. It's like, it's a tamer. I shouldn't say tamer. It's a simpler version of like a George Santos story because of the twists and turns it takes.
Oh, definitely not tamer. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so anyway, today we come to you with a story that says that he has filed suit against CNN over their reporting on his alleged posts on several websites, including the porn sites in question, where he obviously proclaimed himself to be a black Nazi.
Yeah, right. And I mean, you have to make sure that you note that he did that. I believe he claimed to be a black Nazi in a trans video, porn video comment section, right?
Yes, in the comments that where people,
which is where you normally, yeah, that's where you normally do it, right?
I regret my choice of words, but but yeah, I mean, the thing about it though is like, isn't this the don't put it in the paper that I'm mad meme? This is just, you're filing suit over something you claim is you know, a lie or whatever. And probably politically the best thing to do would be to try and move on from that rather than starting a lawsuit that will finish after your gubernatorial race concludes, right?
It's wild. I mean, I'm gonna first, whenever I hear a story like this, my first thought is like, what's the motivation?
Yeah.
Okay, what would be the motivation for CNN to fake a story like this for a guy
from that angle
for a guy that's losing? You know, he's already losing the race, and
right.
So from that angle, but no, to your other point is from the other angle, dude.
Yeah. I'm not seeing it. Is he expecting a big payout due to some defamation judgment, or like, I don't really, is he just trying to stick it to CNN?
No. I think that this is my theory, is that he sees when Trump does this, okay, this flips the script. This makes him the underdog. This makes him the, I'm going after the mainstream media.
Okay.
This is, they're trying to attack me.
Sure.
You know, almost guaranteed, nothing but a positive, albeit very, very small, bump will come out of this
right.
for him. Like, it can't hurt him anymore,
no,
right?
No.
But now it kind of flips the script a little bit, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. Does it give him enough of a bump where he's going to come back in the polling? I mean, like...
Oh, no way, right? No, it can't be. You know, for people at home that are listening on the podcast, we actually now have video, right? So let's pull up, and we'll discuss it for the listeners. I'm gonna find a real clear polling. Doesn't even want to show me.
I have it here. Let me send it to you.
Okay. All right. Oh wait. I just got it at the same time.
Maybe.
So let me share here. This doesn't look good. This doesn't. So the average between September 20th and October 8th is a plus 15.8 lead for Stein. There's no chance.
Now, like I will say, ignoring that one Quinnipiac poll, it's trending downward as we move forward, it looks like, right? From September 20th about this week, it's moved from 16 or 17 points down to 15. But I mean, show me on this graph, Nate. This is a fantastic graph.
This one down here in
the poll data, where does that story break?
Oh, that's a good question. So when did the story break? It's probably somewhere between here and here, right? It's like,
I think it's further down. I mean, you get down there, you have some Robinsons and ties, you've got some Steins plus five, but then it's Stein plus 10 plus 14. And then it's just all.
So my preliminary Googling here tells me it was here around 919.
Wow. I mean, look at that then. Stein had the lead even before this story goes.
Yeah, and so that's what I'm saying. And that's what I was getting to earlier, is that what would CNN's motivation be to be involved in this scheme, this defamation scheme?
Yeah, that makes it seem even more crazy. It's like, oh, Stein's got this, I mean, we'll call it a commanding lead. It's a 10-point plus lead.
That's a commanding lead, right?
And then the story drops.
Right.
A hit piece, if you will, and it's right. Like, okay, it did bump him to 24 in the Cook one, which is funny. But, I mean, otherwise, he's still in double digits at the end of all this. And that's a comfortable lead.
Yeah, to me, nothing's going to come out of this for Robinson. I think, if anything, this gets quickly thrown out.
Is this just so he can make that Trump fight and say, like, everybody tried to cancel me, and then he can sell a book at the end of it?
Right.
Is that the end game?
Oh, it's got to be. It's got to be. Book deals is always is always the way to go. And I mean, and the other thing is, first of all, you're never going to see it. You're never going to see a dime of any money come out of this, right? Like Robinson isn't going to get anything here. He was just allowed to speak on his own.
Yeah.
You see here. Like what happens? Well, hey.
Anyway.
When he was just allowed to speak on his own, things weren't going well. One's over. This one's in the bag. Nothing.
I think that's an interesting segue, though. I like that a lot. I'll say that, you know who I am impressed to hear speak recently?
I think I know who you're going to say.
I think you know who I'm going to say.
I think I know. So I'm going to...
Let's go hear him. Let's go hear this person speak.
Okay. Let's hear this person speak. Let's switch over. Let's switch over and let's listen to a little. Is it Governor Tim Walz, our next?
It's Governor Tim Walz.
Our next vice president? Okay, let's hear what he has to say.
Went on Fox News. That's a safe place for him. He went on there.
No, maybe. Let's hear what he has to say here. Let's hear what he has to say here instead.
Went on Fox News. That's a safe place for him. He went on there. And he suggested that he is going to send the military against the enemy from within. Now, I want you to think about it. In other words, Americans who don't support him. Just to be clear, if any of your neighbors or friends or anybody thinks about that, you know who he's talking about? He's talking about you. He's talking about you. He's talking about someone who comes to a rally to express their love and their commitment to our democracy. Donald Trump sees that as an enemy. All right. So I have to tell you, as someone who wore this nation's uniform proudly, as someone who now is the commander and chief of the Minnesota National Guard, the idea of sending U.S. military personnel against American citizens makes me sick to my stomach. I'll tell you what, we'll let the lawyers decide if what he said was treason, but what I know is it's a call for violence, plain and simple, and it's pretty damn un-American, if you ask.
Yeah.
Wow.
Obviously, that's how you want to hear a presidential candidate speak, especially in this political climate, with the way that your political opponents are talking about you, obviously, but also just generally that whole thing. I love Tim Walz, the way that he talks. He's bringing it to you in a way that we haven't heard spoken plainly in several election cycles from candidates who would be front runners.
Yeah,
obviously we're biased on this, and I think that in years past Bernie would call him out for this sort of, you know, call out Trump for the same sort of nonsense, but Tim Walz has a fire in him, and he speaks it well at these events. He talks this way, and he's just hammering it. And I need more of that. I was hoping that Kamala would be able to bring that kind of passion. I'm sure that there's a reason that she's not doing it. Maybe it's they're doing a good cop, bad cop thing for points in the Midwest or something. But
well,
in that clip right there, I mean, Walz hits him right, you know, smack dab in the face, and he says, He's talking about, you know, interning or arresting American citizens.
Yeah.
And Trump will play it as a dog whistle. He'll be like, I'm going to arrest the immigrants. But every time push comes to shove, he's been talking about just people of color in America. He doesn't care whether they're actually immigrants or not. He cares.
No.
Are they the deplorables or whatever word they use? And Tim Walz is just firing back at him. We need to get that on some airwaves. We need to have the undecided voters hear him speak like that. That's a man of passion.
So you said two things. I'm going to have to start keeping a notepad next to me. You say so many things that I want to respond to. The first thing you said, well, you brought up Bernie Sanders, and man, that's so right. I wish that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why I wish that Biden had dropped out earlier, and why we had a chance to see the Democratic nominee earlier, get out there, get the message out. But one of the reasons, specifically in Tim Walz, is I see him a lot like Bernie Sanders. He would be a populist candidate. He speaks to the people. He speaks a truth that people can understand, you know, at their core, from rural areas, from, you know, areas where you and I are. I mean, he is passionate. He speaks truthfully from the heart. That is a populist candidate. And he
speaks it simply.
Yes.
He doesn't use a lot of political speech when he's talking. He's just talking to you like he's your neighbor.
It's the thing that the other side loves about Trump, right? It's simple and it's no nonsense, except Trump.
It's all nonsense.
It is nonsense. But to them, he's getting straight to the point, right? There's no dressing it up. There's no window dressing. And that leads into my response to you on Kamala is, I think there is a strategy for her, especially being a woman. Unfortunately, she can't go out there and yell and get fired up and say those kinds of things, because she's going to get treated differently than even Tim Walz or Donald Trump. Right. So,
yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that in our episode following the presidential debate, that may have been our first episode. I actually can't remember.
It was the VP debate. Yeah.
We talked about Kamala and her presence on stage. And we talked about that sort of stigma of the woman in power running for a political office and needing to avoid the pitfalls that HRC ran into.
Right.
So in 2016, she tried in a few instances to be a louder, more boisterous, more in your face candidate. And it always backfired they wouldn't put it in the papers, but they're like, well, she's a bitch. Like that's the takeaway.
That was it.
And you're sort of dead to a lot of undecided voters who are somewhat chauvinistic or what have you. And I think you're right. I think that Kamala and crew have to know that she has to play the political, operative. She has to be more of an agent of the older political party system. And then Tim Walz is free to sort of go off the chain as need be and call these guys out. Yeah.
And it's funny though, back to the HRC thing, it's, if you remember the memes that kind of came out around that time was she needed to smile more, right? Hillary just needs to smile more. And now Kamala smiles and laughs too much, right? Like you can't.
I wonder if that's the miss though. I wonder if they're like, if you're going to err to one side, that's the side to err to. I think that you can be an electable woman who is seen as sort of more non-threatening than threatening, if that makes sense. If you're somebody in Ohio and you don't follow politics, you're some guy who votes, right? And you don't follow politics, you might be more willing to vote for a happy woman who makes some valid points than one who's a little snarkier, who's barking at the other guy and coming off as like the angry stepmom in the room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sadly, I do know what you're saying. because imagine if Trump were held to that same standard. I mean, he'd be out of politics.
Held to
any standard, literally any standard. And I mean, maybe that can bring us into some of the topics that are going on today.
So let's hear about some of the topics from today.
Well, first of all, Trump today let's go to last night first.
I want
to
talk about last
night. Let's talk about last night. What do you want to talk about last night?
So, Trump had a town hall last night.
He had a town hall in Pennsylvania. Very important swing state, right?
Very important swing. He was taking questions from the crowd, as I understand it.
How many questions did he take from the crowd?
I actually don't know the number. Do you?
Yeah,
do you
have that? I think it's a couple before he decided no more questions.
Yeah.
He decided. So last night he's at this town hall and by the way, a couple of people passed out. Apparently, I guess it was really like hot in there. Yeah. So a couple of people passed out and Trump did say, I've had arguments for some reason about this. People don't believe it when it comes right out of Trump's mouth, but he said, anybody else want to faint while we're at it? I mean, he's joking, but you know, he said, all right, that's fine. They're trying to get these people out. He's asking if anybody else wants to faint. Everybody laughs and claps. That's so hilarious. Okay.
But they're waiting on EMTs, right? I mean, these aren't like just, this is somebody pearl clutching and waving their face. This is like actual medical emergency.
No, they were a medical emergency. Yeah, they had to get EMTs. They had to get them out of there, right? And so after they're out, right, they go back into question and answer time. And then Trump just decides, I'm not taking any more questions. Play some music. Play the music, okay? And they start playing the literal goodbye music. Like, you know, they've got like...
That's what they had queued up, I guess.
Yeah, it was what it was.
I saw one shot. It was a photographer's shot that was from stage. And you could see the teleprompter. And the prompter itself said, take two more questions, then music. And he walked off the stage. He's like, we're done.
Well, he didn't walk. That's the thing. He didn't walk off the stage.
Yeah. Okay. Initially, they just started playing the music.
Yeah.
Because he's not taking any more questions. But so they sort of meandered around.
39 minutes. He stood on that stage and he just swayed back and forth like this. And every once in a while, he'd put his hands up.
That's energy.
And you can see the shots from the crowd. There are people like,
confused. Yeah, there's a shot with him doing the like this.
Yeah.
And the two people behind him are like looking at their phone, like they're leaning in behind him, like looking at the phone, like what? Like to each other. Very odd images coming out of that entire scene.
It was a really strange event. So after that, you know, this morning, come to find out, he's canceling interviews. So he canceled the interview with CNBC.
And crooked CNBC.
No. I mean, he at least the guys on the Squawk Box show, they're huge Trump fans, right? So this would have been
a slow pitch for him.
Yeah, this would have been a Maria Bartiromo, which is actually where she's from. She started it with, I forget his name, from Squawk Box. So this would have been an easy thing for him. So he blew that off, and it was probably because he was up late. Now at 1 a.m. last night, he was tweeting about Kamala's allergies and saying
he's always tweeting it at middle of the night, though. That's not new.
Listen, he wants her to release her medical records because of her. She's got sinus issues.
Okay. Well, I'll stop you there. Released her medical records. She's the vice president. She had the in-house doctor do
it. What is she hiding? What is she hiding?
Ruled to be in perfect mental and physical ability to be the president of the United States.
Are you sure?
After that is actually when Trump tweeted that she needed to take like a mental cognition test and agility test or something. I can't remember exactly what he says.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. First off, Kamala's medical report is really bad. You don't read. You don't know what it is.
He can't read that.
Yeah. with all the problems that she has, there's a real question as to whether or not she should be running for president. My report is perfect, no problems. I mean, if you had given me this and said, was this written by an AI pretending to be Donald Trump or actual Donald Trump, I couldn't tell them apart. It's the perfect test. I can't do it.
my report is perfect, no problems. Okay, where is what report?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe he's talking about the one that he had rubber stamped for him when he was running in 15. Because I recall that one was like, he weighs 200 pounds and he's 6'8" sure. and he should be playing point guard for the Celtics. I'm going, okay, buddy, you're taller than me and you weigh less than me. That's
right.
That's quite a feat. Nice job. And you know, so all these things coming out, they're all always fake. But yeah, I mean, I want to get back to him calling on her to take this mental test. And of course, in traditional Trump fashion, he's capitalized some of the letters to make it seem like it's an official thing that somebody does.
And I'm right. Like, so somebody did ask me, you know, the other day on Twitter or Blueski, one of those places, hey, how come Trump's not releasing his health report? You know, this is illegal. And unfortunately, it's not illegal. There's no
tradition.
It's tradition.
Not actually a requirement.
I mean, and
I think that it's sort of similar to all of us laboring under the presumption, or at least I learned it in grade school, and it's not even true, but that you can't run for president if you have been convicted of a felony. You can't vote for president if you've been convicted of a felony in certain states.
Right.
But you can run.
Right.
That's crazy to me.
Unfortunately, Trump still isn't, as many people want to call him a felon. I enjoy calling him a felon. Right. He's still, until he's sentenced in under New York. I said it like a New Yorker.
Oh,
under New York law, he is still not considered a felon yet. Yeah.
I mean, that seems just like you're splitting hairs to me.
I am a little bit.
Europeans in second.
I am a little. So let me see. I got another clip queued up here. Yeah. And let me see if the video will play here. And if not, then
we'll give up.
We'll give up.
Second. What about consumers? People out there.
Nah. Of course it was. No, okay, it's not gonna do it. So, of course, it was another. Oh boy, here we go.
It was Trump at this economics expo, basically, where he was talking with, I believe, Bloomberg. Was it Bloomberg?
It was Bloomberg. Yeah, it was a Bloomberg reporter or Bloomberg
talking
poster.
About just economic things and how his campaign promises that he's making are going to translate to actual practical implications in a presidency. So, for instance, he gets, you know, up one night and he says that he's going to impose 200% tariffs against China and Mexico and who knows what else. And so one of the questions this guy says is, not in that clip, but in an earlier one, he says, well, that's going to increase the cost of goods on any names like 40 items that are bought by Americans every single day. And he goes, by an exorbitant amount, it's going to be untenable for these things to compete. And Trump's like, doesn't matter, and you're stupid, so why should anyone listen to you? And then in that clip, he's like, your projected budget for the government that he was talking about, so he's going to do this, that, and the other, he's going to deport these people, he's going to, you know, all of his campaign promises are going to end up, in the best case, like raising the deficit by like $7 trillion. And then the Bloomberg analyst come back and he says, well, and that's just in the like the best case scenario. He goes, a lot of our analysts here think that it's a lot closer to 14 or 15 trillion.
Yeah. Yeah.
and then Trump shoots back at him and he looks him dead in the face and he goes, well, you guys are always wrong. You guys are, you never get it right. I'm always right. You're always wrong. Like, I wish that I was paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said verbatim. And he's talking to an economic expert who works in that field, who just told him, your plans will end up looking like this economically, like fiscally looking this way. And he says, you're stupid and I know more than you because I'm Trump.
In this clip, it was basically that. It's the host says, they're saying your plan to tax all imported goods will be a national sales tax costing Americans $4,000 a year. Okay. Yeah. It's going to cost Americans. Trump says no. He just says no. And
yeah. I mean, and you got to understand, a lot of our foodstuffs are imported simply because they don't grow here. I mean, and that's like, you think of where, I mean, we're a big exporter of foods as well from our farms. They go externally, corn, flour, that sort of thing, like staples, they go, they're exported out of country. Same is true for other countries. We import things from other countries that don't grow very well here. A lot of soy products grow okay in California, but that's basically it. And we have to do a lot of importing on the East Coast, and Southern Edge in particular, from overseas to get those things. You put tariffs on there, the cost of anything that includes soy in it is going to go up, you know, a lot.
Simple. It's just said simple math. And then the fact that he's still, after all of this time, after people making fun of him for not understanding how tariffs work, is literally insane. The companies overseas do not pay the tariffs. The importer pays the tariffs. That's how it works.
And then that trickles down. That cost trickles down to ultimately the purchaser at the end of the line, who's the consumer at the grocery store and what have you.
And never giving him credit. This is not credit where credit is due. This is just talking about his talking point, which is, well, then we'll just build the factories in the United States. But it's literally the same problem. You're not growing the things in the United States. You're not mining the things in the United States. You have to import raw goods. Those tariffs are still going to be a problem. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And in fact, a lot of the things he's proposed tariffs on hurt manufacturing the most, because we import a lot of steel and a lot of concrete for those jobs. I don't know what the technical term is. We create a lot of concrete for use in industrial production locally in the United States, but we import a lot more than we produce, is my understanding. Same with steel. We used to be, in World War II times, we were the steel production, like, booming era of the world, but that time is long past. We import a lot of our steel and other metals like that from developing nations, by and large, but also China, also Korea, these places that have a lot of raw natural goods that can create them for pennies on the dollar, because they're basically using slave labor, but then shipping them over to us. And then by imposing tariffs, you are using an economic knob to try and make it so that you would buy American versus foreign, domestic versus foreign products. But the supply that is domestic can't meet the demand that our country has at the moment. So even if you were to somehow cut off all importation of those goods, that only hurts Americans.
I mean,
it's literally cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
It's one of the oldest sayings that exists.
I mean, I don't know if they brought it up I didn't get to watch the whole thing, but yeah, supply chain disruptions are one of the things that would happen. I mean, tariffs would cause chaos in global supply chain, which, by the way, if we remember, as Trump's favorability ratings, dipped, his unfavorability ratings, I guess, reached peaks at the end of his presidency, part of the reason was due to global supply chain disruptions. Not all entirely his fault, but it was because of mismanagement of a global pandemic. He wants to get back into office, and he's like, hey, how can I screw up global supply chains again? Like,
and to put a little more context onto that, during the end of his administration, while he still had people in his cabinet with him who would say no to him,
right?
Who would say,
right,
no, no, no,
yeah,
that level of tariff would cause like global recessions or depressions, and it would be just catastrophic.
Right.
This next Trump term, he's learned that lesson. He's made it quite clear. He's not surrounding himself with anything but yes men. So he's going to have an idea like, I want a 6,000% tariff on steel from China, and he's going to destroy the world economic position.
I mean, I'm laughing. I don't mean to be laughing, but yes.
That's it's just his plan. And he gets upset like a baby when people tell him no.
I mean, there are literal studies, I mean, that show that these types of tariffs have little, they don't help U.S. consumers at all. I mean, we know that for a fact.
We know that.
They have minimal manufacturing benefits. Like, they don't help U.S. manufacturing or protect it in any way. It increases diplomatic tensions, which has the, hey, I never started any wars. You know, no, this is, trade war is just as bad. It hurts. It literally hurts Americans. I mean, it. And the
upsides of such positions, if you're going to impose tariffs, they need to be long-standing enough that they will have an impact over decades, not just a year or two. Tariffs aren't the type of thing that you could impose that's going to help in the short term. What you want, if you're going to impose tariffs for whatever reason, is for the next 20 years, I'm going to cripple your economy by crippling my economy this much. And at the same time, I'm going to try and grow those jobs, that market, whatever, in my country while we're both hurting. And if that's your only export to speak of, your GDP is reliant on it, I can completely, you know, hobble you with it, and I'll grow that sector in my country. And then once we come to an economic agreement on something else, I can reduce those tariffs, but it won't matter as much because I've built that infrastructure. I have those markets in place over the long haul.
Yeah, and good point on the GDP, by the way. Like, Trump's tariffs projected, if he got into office and were to implement his ideas, a loss of at least 1% in GDP. I mean, this,
That's amazing.
Geez, I mean, you know, they mention, or I think at least Kamala's fact-checking mentioned, it could cost American consumers $4,000 a year. There are other estimates that show $1,700 to $7,500 a year annually
just for
consumers.
Price raises. Do you remember how up in arms everyone got when Kroger and the rest basically just decided to raise prices arbitrarily? Like, milk went up like $2 a gallon.
I think it was around
the midterms. So everyone got all upset about this because their grocery bill went up $100 a week.
Right.
And it's understandable. That's not nothing. That is a real world dollar amount that makes
us all hurt. We're still feeling it as it's coming down, as inflation is coming down. We're still feeling it at the grocery store, sure.
Yeah, for sure. And can you imagine like that happening across everything, not just groceries, but everything you spend money on?
And that's just tariffs. Let me give you the alternate example of like what's happening in Florida. Okay, if you try to get rid of migrants, okay, if you try to have mass deportation of the people that work in your farms, okay, that gather your oranges, okay, what do you think is going to happen to the price of those goods?
Yeah, the price and availability, because the other problem that you have is that if you're foodstuff that grows in the earth, it has an expiration date.
If you can't
get them off the vine, off the branch, whatever, and into trucks and moved to grocery stores within a certain amount of time, it's going to rot before you can sell it. And what's worse is that the American consumer, the grocery store consumer, is so very picky about what they eat that any produce that has even the slightest blemish on it doesn't get bought. And we've known this for decades and decades.
Yeah, I mean, there are grocery stores that have models around trying to be, hey, I'll sell you the distorted fruit for a dollar. And they fail all the time.
Yeah. And you know? So imagine that you're doing that. You're getting rid of the farmers' ability to get their products to market in a reasonable way that they can actually be sold. They'll get there and you're going to have, you know, bruised apples and oranges. You're going to have vegetables and things that are just wilting away and dying, and no one's going to want to buy them. And it's going to be cyclical. It will feed itself and it'll just make the whole problem worse.
So this was a really great transition. And I want to just touch on a few more points about mass immigration and deportation, because this is just another one of Trump's awful, terrible ideas.
That's his only campaign position.
It is. This one, and everybody's talking about tariffs, okay, because that's an easy one to say, look how stupid he is. Yeah. And immigrants, you know, it's an easy one to say, look how hateful he is. But this one actually would hurt the economy more, okay? So experts say, first of all, mass deportation is just impossible. Like, it's not something you're going to be able to do. But
even
it would...
if it were possible, it's so costly. How do you move a million more people?
You couldn't do it, right? But it would, so it's estimated that it would shrink the GDP by 4.2% to 6.8%. And for comparison, the Great Recession in 2007 to 2008, 4.3% you know, the GDP shrank by 4.3%. So we're talking about 7% is just like, you know, roundabouts. The GDP loss over 10 years would be over $5 trillion, okay? These people that Trump supporters will tell you, they're getting our hospital beds. Well, Trump is saying this, right? They're coming into your schools. They're taking over your hospital beds. Your kids aren't getting the attention they need because of the. First of all, none of that is true. They don't qualify for almost any federal help, like except for emergency Medicaid. Oh, okay, right. God forbid their life is on the line and they get emergency Medicaid, okay, or something like that. That's terrible. But these migrants, okay, they actually still pay taxes,
right.
Okay? They pay taxes, they pay into those programs, they pay sales taxes. Something like a mass deportation would mean losing upwards of $60 billion in federal taxes and $25 billion paid into Social Security, which are things that they're not even using.
Right.
So...
And even beyond that, I mean, there are logistics involved in just figuring out who they're talking about. They don't have a clear picture of that at the moment either, because
no.
Trump keeps in his stump speeches talking about how he's going to deport Americans.
Right.
He's saying, I think this was following the Haitian pet eating scandal. Bans brought up, which is
yeah,
ridiculous.
Sure,
but
sure.
Trump said in a speech, well, I'm sorry, but some of these people are just going to have to leave. And the context was these are legal Americans who emigrated here legally. They live
right.
here and are American
right.
citizens.
Right.
And he's going to deport them. Well, how? How are you going to identify an American citizen versus a non-American citizen in that capacity?
In that,
does that
I
mean that I'm grandfathered in because I've been an American citizen my whole life, but they're not because they've only been an American citizen for 15
couple
years.
Couple generations. You know, that's maybe that's what they mean.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What,
deportation,
yeah.
but with a Jim Crow feel. Got
he sways and bobs on this a little bit, right? He goes from first it's gang members. Okay, first it's immigrant gang members because there's so many of those, right, that are just coming in to join gangs, right? And then it goes to, okay, just illegal immigrants who have crossed the border here illegally. Then he starts saying migrants, right? And then it becomes, are you just talking about brown people?
I think he's just talking about brown people. And what about, like, the legal people who come here on work visas to do that farm exercise we just talked about where they're picking fruit and whatever? They don't even live here. They come here for harvest seasons for short couple weeks stints. They're put up by the farmers who they are working for. And then they go back to their home countries with a couple of extra dollars in their pocket.
When I ran restaurants back in the day, a couple of lifetimes ago, I used to run a restaurant on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And every summer, very, very busy in the summer, of course, everybody and their mom wants to visit the Cape on the summer. Okay.
Sure.
We had a program where we took in Jamaicans who were here on work visas. And not only were they just, I mean, I love that. So I was a general manager and these guys would come in. They were the hardest working people that we had. Listen, their whole lives depended on being able to come over here, make this money and go back and take care of their family. I had guys that would stay, you know, after we closed, after they were done cleaning, they would have to FaceTime with their family because they haven't seen them in months. And then
right.
they go back home. I mean, this is the kind of people, these are the kind of people that Trump is talking about. He's not talking about gang members.
Even if he is talking about gang members, the numbers don't make any sense.
It doesn't
He's going to deport a million people. There's not a million gang members.
It's not a million gang members. And so, yeah, somebody will respond to a tweet I make that'll show me a very sad situation where an apparently undocumented immigrant did something terrible to an American citizen. And those kinds of people should be punished. They should be locked up. They should be deported. But in the same sense that not every person who is a Republican is a Nazi, although I'm starting to question that. Not every immigrant, you know, is somebody who does terrible things like that. In fact, there are tons of studies that show that immigrants per capita are less violent than American citizens.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I mean, I look at simple anecdotal evidence, but I'm like, I don't remember the last time I saw a news story saying that an illegal immigrant shot up a school. doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
I wonder why that doesn't happen.
I mean, so there are, first of all, why doesn't that happen? But so it's a good point, though. There's lots of reasons why this is true. And the studies, and I'll link some studies in the show notes, which maybe we should start doing show notes, because we talk about a lot of things here that require maybe a fact check, right? And I think I pride myself, at least, in being people that are bringing facts to the table, something that you're going to verify. We're not just here talking out of our ass, okay?
Quick aside, a note on that. Check out our blog over at bluesedition.com. We have a blog there where we make blog posts just like this, and we link all of our sources. Anything that we find that's factually relevant to the blog post we write, we cite it, and we have it so that you can click it on the blog post. So
if
you ever have any question about our position on things, you want to make a good informed argument against us, you can find our reading materials, you can look it up. Come argue with us in the comments. Leave us a like. Give us a subscribe.
Yeah. Wow. That was great. I think we can just wrap the show. But one of the things that I find so fascinating about the study, and I could do a whole show on it, and I might even just write a blog post later today about this, is that first-generation immigrants commit fewer crimes per capita than Americans do, right? Because they have something to be here for. But the study shows second-generation, third generation, as they get more acclimated, right, to America, guess what starts to happen? They commit crimes at a similar rate than as Americans do. It's literally insane. So, I mean, I think this article, Jasmine, brings up kind of the same points that I was just talking about. They're talking about Senator Katie Britt, who brings up, and everyone else who brings up Lake and Riley's horrific murder, which, was an extremely terrible thing. And the Venezuelan migrant who did it should be locked up, should be put away to the full extent of the law, just like any American citizen who had done such a thing should be. But you know what? We're not going around saying deport all Catholic priests, are we? Are we saying that? Well, maybe we should start saying that. I don't know. Now I don't know where to fall on this.
Certainly a few of them I could do with being elsewhere. But I think that's a different episode.
Yeah, probably. So anyway, I think that was a good spin into basically every single one of Trump's, and I say every single one, he's got like two plans or policies. I don't even know what you would call them. It's just ramblings.
Campaign promises.
Campaign promises. That's
what
he's
running on.
What he's running on. Those two items would be an economic disaster for the United States.
Not to mention, I mean, we've drilled this into them now, but social, economic, just every facet of American life just gets completely derailed and destroyed by this type of action. Obviously, I don't think he actually plans on doing any of these things. I pray that he doesn't. I just want it to be talking points to rally his insane base. But I mean, even if if he wins and he does try to enact these things, it'll be devastation.
I will just say
everyone will feel it, not just brown people, but men, women, white, everybody,
who's
an American citizen or not, an illegal immigrant, you're all going to feel it, and it's just going to be terrible.
And I will say to you saying I don't think this is something he would do, or I don't say I'm done saying that. Me personally, the man says he's going to do something. He was a disaster. He tried to do all the things that he said he wanted to do last time, and he had a few sane people around him, like you said earlier, that helped stop that. I take this man for his word. He would be an unmitigated disaster the second time around. We can't afford it. We just can't afford it.
I agree. And that's why earlier I really like hearing Tim Walz, rail on him like that, because it does just sort of bring his insanity to the forefront. And it makes it so that when the news outlets are forced to report on his Tim Walz speeches, they have to address what he's saying. And if he makes the forefront of his speeches just about how Trump he hates Americans and he's trying to deport American citizens and he wants to turn the military on American citizens. And you just bang that drum, man. Just keep going. It's fantastic.
It's insane.
But meanwhile,
meanwhile,
what's, What's Kamala doing?
What is Kamala doing? So, I mean, while Trump was holding a rally, I think Kamala was in Pennsylvania as well last night. Okay. She held her own rally. She's scheduling shows. So I want to ask you this. She's came out today. I saw a story that her team is in talks with Joe Rogan's team on getting her on the Joe Rogan podcast. What are your thoughts there?
It's an interesting one. Joe Rogan obviously has a just fabulously large listenership. He has more people listening to him and his guests than any other podcast, certainly, but a lot of other like news networks and things. So an interview on some news station probably pales in comparison to the viewership you would receive for sitting Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
I don't personally listen to Joe Rogan. I definitely see his clips from time to time. I've seen the more famous ones. I've seen him and Musk smoking pot. I've seen him interviewing. I was forced to, because of this podcast, see the RFK talking with him a little bit. And so I think I'm sort of surprised that Rogan agreed to it, or his people agreed to it. But I think that it's a good move from Kamala, because I do think that you're gonna get in front of a lot of people who haven't heard you actually speak. A lot of maybe not apolitical people, but people who prefer their head in the sand. I'm thinking of like my social sphere and the people I know who actually listen to Rogan.
Right.
And they consider themselves, you know, politically minded, but then they don't actually do any digging, and they don't do any activism, and they don't do any of the, and at the end of the day, I think that they're just basically football fans. They've either picked a blue or a red team, and then they do it.
Okay.
So if you can get Kamala on Joe Rogan and he asks reasonable questions and she responds calmly and naturally, I think it could be really good. I think you can get into the ears and minds of people who otherwise would not give her attention, who would not listen to her.
So I am, well, let me first say the reasons why I agree. I watched I watch sometimes, and I'm not a fan of his because I think he is I'm not going to go too crazy. I listen to the Lex Fridman podcast sometimes, depending on who the guest is. Okay. More because I want to hear the guest than I want to hear him. Sure. And I listened to the episode with Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks.
Turks,
Who, you know, has fallen out of favor with me in the recent past as well. But I listened to the podcast, or I watched it on YouTube, and then I went into the YouTube comments, which is always a mistake to do. But in this particular case, a lot, and I mean a lot of the comments were, I didn't realize how reasonable Cenk Uygur was. Oh, I thought this guy was just a socialist. I thought this, oh, he made a lot of great points. And man, that's the reason why you do those shows.
Yeah, I think so.
So I think that Kamala going on a Joe Rogan podcast, I don't think it could hurt her.
Yeah, I think that as long as it isn't one of those episodes where you're going to have more people in the studio, like I don't listen to Joe Rogan.
No, there's no studio audience or anything.
Not a studio audience. I mean, like a second or third guest who might be present as well, because they have done that in the past.
Yeah. I think it would be a one-on-one.
Like her and, you know, Mitt Romney or something silly like that. Then when you get that pushback, then it can become a little distracting. I think that there's a lot of people who in a vacuum can make themselves sound intelligent to the listener. And they seem like otherwise reasonable people. But when you actually have to push against their ideas a little bit, that's when you start to see that maybe they're just a charlatan of sorts. Like I think about like Jordan P. Peterson. He's a great example. I bring him up too much, but he's a great example of a person who can talk through his ideas one-on-one with no pushback. And at face value, they sound reasonable.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right.
But I mean, and then sometimes, you know, when you get somebody pushing back on you a little bit and just going, well, what about something, and it's the thing that they didn't consider or didn't want to talk about, and that gets them into trouble, because then that takes them down the rabbit hole that leads to them being insane. So I think, I hope that the joke.
this is what he looks like anytime somebody pushes back on him.
Or that's asks, what Joe Rogan looks like. Oh no.
No. This is what Peterson looks like every time somebody pushes back on him. So yeah. I'm just saying.
I hope he gets the mental health he needs. So Kamala on Joe Rogan, I think she's going to get a lot of a slow pitch, and she's going to have chances to take some swings. I think it'd be good. I think she's going to get in the ears of people who would never go out of their way purposefully to listen to her. They're not going to watch the debates. They're going to see what they see in their various timelines on social media, but they still listen to podcasts. You know this better than most. People who are offline do listen to podcasts. They watch shows. They pick up on these things. So getting into the most, you know, probably the most popular podcast at present.
Definitely.
Of all time, maybe? I'm not sure.
Probably of all time.
That can only be good for her. I completely agree with you.
I'll say when Bernie Sanders did it, I remember that being a huge deal, and I remember it turning a lot of people on to Bernie Sanders that otherwise weren't Bernie Sanders fans.
Right.
I'm not giving any credit to anybody I don't like, and I don't want to give any credit to Joe Rogan. he pretends like he's left leaning. He did
for a number of years. I think
he still does. He still says it. He still says that he is, but he's exactly.
In his interview with Musk, he said he was going to vote for Trump. So I mean, pretend you're left leaning and then do that. I can't.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say I don't want her to do it. I don't want to see, because the problem is, especially if it were a smaller podcaster, I don't want to give him the attention. I don't want to build the base. I don't want to do anything like that on the other end. But on this side, because he's so big, I think it only helps Kamala rather than like helps Joe Rogan. I mean, I don't think it does anything for his.
In fact, that's where I started this segment is saying, I don't know how Kamala got on Joe Rogan. It feels like he's doing her a favor.
Maybe
Rogan wants a cabinet position. Maybe that's it.
No, my God. Can you imagine? She did come out to say another reason. We can talk about this a little bit before we wrap today. We're going to tie things in nicely. Let's go from Joe Rogan to legalizing recreational marijuana. A nice big green sign that was put out from Kamala's campaign today and thrown across all of her socials is that, you know, as president, Kamala Harris will work to legalize recreational marijuana at a national level.
I mean, that's a pen stroke for the president, because it's basically a guideline set by the DEA, isn't it? And so, like, I remember, I think...
So they have to...
Declassified it from, like, a Schedule 1 to like a Schedule 3 drug, which meant that like it was on par with heroin, and now it's like on par with codeine or something.
I think it still would have, I think it would have to go through the DEA and then get congressional approval. This is not something that could be a like day one.
You don't think that if the DEA were given an order to, they could remove a drug from their schedule?
So I think that they can. But I think that it still has to get congressional, like the next step has to get congressional approval.
It's interesting. But okay. I mean, you can obviously do some other things about it. At current, most of the states have taken it into their own hands, and the DEA is basically wink wink that they're not going to prosecute anybody for those sorts of things.
Yeah. And I mean, it's hugely popular as well, right? Like it's one of those things that is just,
we live in California, so this is sort of a weird thing, but you can buy, you know, pot or those sorts of things from any gas station. You go into the Chevron and you can buy, you know, what are the gummies, THC gummies and things, and it's like nobody cares. So the fact that there's any pushback on this at all, I mean, maybe I'm just California brained, you know, maybe that's the problem. Maybe if I were in Arkansas right now, they're seeing a real epidemic around marijuana.
So, I mean, 24 states and Washington, D.C. have legalized recreational marijuana.
Right.
It says here that it is still Schedule 1. So it would take the Department of Justice has announced its intent to ease federal restrictions by potentially reclassifying it, but it is not yet. Yeah, and then full legalization at the federal level would require congressional action to amend the Controlled Substances Act.
Yeah, okay, that does make sense then.
So, I mean, yeah, it's not as simple as a pen stroke, but what she could do, right? You put the people in the right places where it is a... It just makes sense to do it, right? If you have the president can order like executive agencies like the HHS and DEA to force that kind of rescheduling review, right? And then you go and you put that in front of Congress and you say, not only do we have this, but this is what the American people want. And then put it to a floor vote, baby. And this is the stuff that you got to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I love it. I love the messaging. I think it plays well in most of the lean blue states. And a lot, actually, I wonder, I don't think we have time for this, but I wonder what the crossover between swing states and have legalized marijuana or decriminalized at the state level is. Obviously, California has already decriminalized it, but you said 24 other states have, or 23 other states have.
So I have the list right here. I can just run down the list for everybody who wouldn't be able to see the screen. So let me share it, and then I can just talk down it really quickly. But there are swing states on here. So let me share this.
Maybe that's the play. Maybe that's the reason
It could be. So we got Alaska, Arizona, swing state, right?
Yep.
California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, D.C., Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, swing state,
Minnesota,
Missouri, Montana, Nevada, swing state, right? New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Ohio,
wow.
Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington.
You know, I wonder if Ohio is more blue than it's letting on from polling. Look at this graph, right? The green states, I mean, I'm just looking at the green states in the Midwest and the upper. Those are all swing states, basically. Wisconsin, I'm a little surprised Wisconsin isn't, but...
But look at the blue on this map, which people can't see. The blue is legal for medical.
South Dakota.
I mean, this is crazy.
I mean, Oklahoma, probably the reddest state in the nation in terms of like position on things. They say it's legal for medical use, which is very broad. That could be anything.
Right.
I mean, I have to have my doctor say I have glaucoma.
I mean.
Frankly, I'm surprised that Hawaii is set to legal for medical use as opposed to recreation.
And
that's very surprising.
And decriminalized, though. That's the other thing. So there's this D up. It's probably hard to see. So on some of these blue marked states like Hawaii, there's a D for decriminalized, as well as Mississippi, which is just, I mean, what is happening?
I don't know. That's bizarre to me.
So clearly, this is a thing that the majority of Americans want. I mean, come on, it's past time. I think this is a winning thing to run on, and I hope she keeps pushing for it. And then I hope, because honestly, I think even Barack Obama had talked about this. Yeah. Biden had run on this, and let's face it, Biden didn't really move the needle on this much, other than a lot of pardoning. Which I think is really important.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I clearly misremembered it, but in my brain I had him saying that he was going to lower the schedule number of it. So if that's like a planned thing that he started, I mean, good on him.
Yeah, but clearly a lot of...
Go ahead.
I was going to say a lot of work has been done from the Obama administration to the Biden administration about making the stigma of recreational marijuana abuse disappear. You know, use, not abuse. It's two different things.
Yeah, I mean, it will be like ordering a beer in a lot of states. So
yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that seems like common sense to most people now. I think that, I mean, you talk to some elderly boomers and they'll say like, oh, my neighbor, I smelled pot. And then you go, well, so what?
So yeah, that was me.
I saw your neighbor mowing the lawn with a beer in his hand. Like, what's the problem?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And they eventually come over. I just think it's that knee-jerk reaction. Thanks, Reagan. Old Nixon. Excuse me. Sorry. That one was actually on Nixon, not Reagan.
Yeah, we can blame Reagan for...
Reagan did dare. Nixon started the...
Yeah. And the HIV stigmatization jazz, too, was Reagan.
Yeah, that was Reagan.
So, okay. I mean, I think we covered a lot today. We could go on for another 4 hours. There's a couple of things I want to bring up. First, there is 20 days and, like, at the time of recording this, maybe 7 hours before the first polls open for in-person voting on election day. It is so, so, so important that if you can't early vote, that you find a way to get out and vote on election day. Do not think your vote does not matter. This is absolutely no time to be on the sidelines. I assume if for some reason you have listened to this point in the podcast, you are a voter, and you'll be out there. But encourage everyone else that you know that there is no sitting on the sidelines on this one.
Yeah, and also at this point of recording, a lot of states have opened their early voting. So if you vote by mail or you can do early voting drop-off, know that that's open to you. You should check your voter registration, make sure that you're ready to go, and have a plan. Have a plan to vote. Get your family to vote. Talk to your parents and aunts and uncles and get everybody energized to vote and find those people who say, you know, I'm not a voter. I don't care about it, blah, 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 and give them reason to.
I live in a little red corner of California, and I'm in Facebook groups for my town, my city, and there are people offering to drive people to the polls. Do you need me to take you to go early vote? I will do that for you. I mean, I'm seeing people come together over this in a big way. It, again, I think, Mike, you know, there's a recurring theme for me. I go through some major swings, ups and downs. I'm hopeful at this moment, seeing a lot of people come together on this. I think election night is going to be really interesting. That's the second thing I wanted to say. I think the plan is right now for us to be doing a live show.
I think we're going to do it live.
We're going to do this live. So we're going to have we'll have a couple more podcasts probably in between, I'm sure. And we'll let you know. But I think as of right now, we'll probably be doing a live show, live podcast during the election. During election night, we'll have maybe tickers running. We'll switch it over to some live coverage. We'll make sure we get the video worked out by then so that we can kind of watch and react to results as they come in. I think it'll be a really fun time.
Should be. I'm looking forward to it.
So I think that's it for today. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Stay informed, stay engaged, and remember, dissent is patriotic.
Until next time, this is the Blue Sedition Podcast signing off.